Well, look at this. She is back from location, and we're about to hear about those locations with our travel guide, Sally Lucas, for Talking Travel. You're back from your holiday. Welcome.
Thank you very much. And what an incredible holiday it was, which I will be discussing with our listeners over the next couple of weeks. Today, I'm going to start with the Inca Trail, which I didn't do, but my husband did, but he's given me some lovely notes to let you know.
I remember that being a thing. So he's going to do that. I'm going to do some other stuff.
Yeah. And then I'll start on Ecuador, mainland Ecuador. Of course, Galapagos is part of Ecuador, but it's obviously an archipelago. But I'll talk about mainland and the Ecuadorian Amazon Basin.
Has the regulars of life caught up with you, hit you over the head yet, Sally, or are you still...
No, I'm good.
All right.
I'm good. Back to normal.
All right. Well, let's get into those holidays that you have done. Ecuador first?
Inca Trail.
Inca Trail.
I didn't do this. I have done part of it before and been to Machu Picchu, my husband hadn't, so this was something that had been on his bucket list. So he went ahead and did this first, and he's given me some notes. Now, you may recall I've mentioned before that he's a bit of a climber, and he's done four different trips to Nepal, Everest Base Camp twice, and a couple of other peaks. He thought this was really tough.
Wow, compared with Everest.
Well, when you do the climbs in Nepal, it's more gradual and they give you more time to acclimatise. Of course, this is only a 4-day, 3-night trek. They just think, oh, that's okay. It's short. Up you go.
Okay.
But when you get to Cusco, it's very high in altitude. And then Scott got a bad headache the first night. And then, you know, he had two nights there. And then you go down to the start of where the trek is, which is at a place which is always difficult to pronounce, Ollantaytambo, if I'm saying it correctly.
Half a chance you're not, but that's okay.
So, he said the first day wasn't too bad, but he said the second day, it was just straight up. You know, 3,100 metres was that second day. So that's a fair hike.
3 kilometres straight up when you
think about that. Yeah. And then on the hardest days, he said you'd climb 1,100 metres to the highest point, which is 4.215, and it's called Dead Woman's Pass. For what reason, I'm not sure. But then you descend 600 metres to the second night camp, and that site is at 3,650 metres. So you do need to be fit, is what I'm trying to get at. You do need to do some training for this. Now, you have to be accompanied by an accredited guide. This is not something you can self-do. It has to be through an expedition-style company. But they are really wonderful in the way they look after you, and I've experienced this myself, and he said the same. He said the quality of the meals, when you think they're carrying everything with them and having to prepare, you know, meals on the go, plus all your equipment, and you get to lunch or morning tea and it's all set up, you know, and you're still climbing, trying to catch up with the porters, you know. You're only allowed 5 kilos of gear, which includes a sleeping bag, which weighed 2 kilos, and he thought he had a really light one. So that 3 kilos, that's not very much.
No, by the time you've got a change of clothing,
it's not much at all.
Maybe a toothbrush, that might put you over the edge.
I know. And if you're carrying a camera, and then you might have a poncho or a weather jacket, etc., because you get cold up at altitude. So, but the meals are first class, as he said. You know, you get a porridge or an omelette, etc., for breakfast. Lunch would be a soup and a meal and fruit. And then similar for dinner, you might get soup and a meal and fruit. But they did cook a cake at one stage even. Amazing what they do, these guys. So it is a hard climb. And on the last day, the fourth day, they wake you up at about 3:30 in the morning. All the camps are packed up. The porters leave early. They catch a train home. And then you just
I can't blame them, really. They've got to be back to – well, next week they're back to do it all again.
I know. Then it's a 5-kilometre walk into what they call the Sun Gate. And this is where you get up that early because it's to see the sun rising over Machu Picchu, which is quite a sight. So that is done. And it's probably, you know, the best of the 4 days. But they call it sometimes a gringo killer. But he reckons it's not too difficult after the previous 2 days. He didn't find it so bad.
So can you do that? Can you do a cheating version of that? Just catch the train up, watch the sunrise?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yep, you can. You can catch the train from Cusco up to Aguas Calientes, which is the town that is supporting Machu Picchu, the site of Machu Picchu, and then you can get a bus to the actual resort.
Meet
you up there. But get the one early in the morning because it gets so busy, like everything is tourism-wise these days, that you need to really get in there early, which is why, even though it's beautiful to see the sun, it's another reason. If you get in there really early, it's before all the hordes of tourists arrive. So recommend that. But the train trip itself is spectacular anyway. It's absolutely the most wonderful train trip. So don't feel bad if you're not up to doing the trek, which I'm not anymore. I'm not at that fitness level or age where I even want to do it, to be quite honest with you. Mm. But you can still obviously get and see the wonderful sight of Machu Picchu without doing the trek.
That's good. You do if you want to do it the hard way. We can do this the easy way or the hard way. We'll
yes.
do it the train.
Whichever way you wish. But it's he who was certainly impressed and what did think it was excellent, but just tougher than he thought.
Mm. All right. We will continue with Sally's travel log from her South American adventures, where we're learning so much about Sally's little trip that you've been on. I say little, it's a huge trip you've been on.
Well, it is a huge
trip. It's going to take a couple of weeks here just to get through it.
Oh, it will, but that's okay. I'm happy to do that. So next we're in Ecuador, where I met up with Scott, and Quito is the capital.
After he showered, of course, from that 4th.
Oh, God, yeah. exactly
you stink.
Right.
Go away, have
Go
a shower.
Away. But Quito is amazing. I'm surprised a city was ever built there because it's all mountains with deep canyons. And you look and you think, and then these people are living on these high, high slopes. A lot of them don't have cars or anything. Like, they'd have to be mountain goats. You know, look at the places they live in. It's just, I mean, the height is mind-boggling.
Yeah, have they not sort of looked down and thought there's a whole lot of flat land down there? Why don't we build there?
There, I know. It's bizarre. Anyway, it's got a population of about 17 million in the country, and Spanish is your spoken language. It's official language, but they do have other native languages like Quechua, which is spoken still in some of the areas, particularly in the Amazon Basin area where we went as well. Quito itself is not a modern city compared with other, if you like, capital cities of the world. It's quite a poor country, and you know, we went to Santiago in Chile at the end, but, you know, just by comparing those two capital cities were poles apart. Lots of, like, big, tall buildings in Santiago, international companies, you know what I mean, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, this didn't have
Whereas Quito is mainly just all local, predominantly. Their main export, though, is petroleum, but they don't actually – haven't got anywhere there that's suitable to – and manufacture or do anything with the product. It's just they just
so
sell it.
Not much in the way of refinery.
No refineries there. And then the other export is roses. They grow these incredible roses up to 1.5 metres tall. We went to the rose farm and they're considered the largest blooms in the world. Stunning. And the perfume of them. Russia used to be one of their biggest buyers, but of course that's all changed. America's another one. The other thing is, of course, tourism. And that they have what they call the bananas, and their equivalent is the plantain, which is a much bigger fruit, a little bit more tart than a banana. So it's an interesting place. Of course, their original Ecuadorian currency was never very flash, so they converted a few years back now to US, so it's all US dollars, which makes it easier for us rather than you go to Santiago in Chile and you've got 1,600 and something pesos. You know, for a dollar, which is ludicrous. But apparently Argentina's doing the same. They're switching to US dollar because it's a more stable currency than their own local currencies.
I think as well they might actually be good for tourists coming down from the US as well. They don't have to change it.
Well, that's exactly right, because obviously, you know, the main people coming into that area are from North America, of course. So anyway, that was just to give you a little bit about the country itself. So we did a tour that took us to the actual equator. Now, this was amazing. So it's an imaginary line, isn't it? Like it's not anything you can see.
Nope.
But you're told that's where it is.
No, you don't look out and there's this perforated line scorched into the earth. It's
but
not there.
It's called the middle of the world or the mitad del mundo, and it shows you or showcases you what modern day GPS has proven to be the true site of the equator line. And you can actually have your device there and it'll actually read 0 degrees latitude and 0 degrees longitude. But you stay one side of that line and you put your arms out. If you can just visualise this, try and visualise it. You know when you sometimes go to a physiotherapist and they say push down or push up to see how strong your shoulder
is. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So you do that on one side of the line and you could really you're fighting the guy who's trying to do it. The other side, your arm just goes boop.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And then they had two sinks with water in, and on one side the water goes down the sink with a vortex one way. It goes the other way.
They've found the line.
So but it was just amazing. And we did the same when we did the cruise around the Galapagos. We got to the equator line and everyone cheered when we got to the line because it read naught, 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 naught. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the weather there in Quito or in that part of Ecuador is sun gets up at 6, goes down at 6, year round. Mid-20s temperatures, year round. And they don't have seasons other than wet and dry. And we were there in what they call the dry season, which is typically like our winter, I suppose, if you want to call it that.
So like our winter, but a little bit warmer.
Yeah.
See, I like that.
The sort of weather we're having now. But then when you go down, we went and did a tour down into the Ecuadorian Amazon Basin and stayed on a river in this beautiful lodge on the river. Very humid. You know,
oh, no thanks.
Jungle.
You can keep that.
Yeah. Jungle. You know,
yeah, it's so, just so different.
So we were 30, 31, but high humidity once you were down there. So how proud was I, Mark? I packed for three different climates.
Amazing. This is
fair. And I only took 16.9 kilos.
Wow, well, very underweight.
How's that?
Yeah.
How proud am I?
Now what you need to do is everything still – oh, you probably packed it all away now. I want you to try and do the challenge. So I want you to do the 5K challenge. Pack for 5K.
Oh, God, I couldn't do that.
No,
I couldn't do that. But anyway, yes, Ecuador has got a lot of contrast. But the actual city, we went to what they call the old part of the city. Well, that was fascinating because like a lot of cities, they've got their original old area with the cobblestone streets and the beautiful old churches and lovely buildings. And so we did a walking tour of that area where we had a chocolate tasting where they grow the cocoa beans and explained about the cocoa beans and, you know, how they actually it's pure. What they don't believe in milk chocolate. That's not chocolate.
Yeah.
Chocolate is only dark.
Yep, just dark. There's dark chocolate and there's confectionery.
That's it. That's exactly it. And we did all these different tastings. And so, yeah, it was really a very interesting city to walk around and, you know, very busy. You know, there were lots of people. We were there just, you know, was it a weekday? I can't remember what day of the week it was now. No, I know why it was so busy. It was a Sunday. So all the families, everyone comes out.
Roger that.
Yes. Mm. And so then this main Independence Square, you know, it was full of families having a good time and people speaking, orators, you know, flogging something or talking about something and musicians doing something else and people eating and having fun and wandering around. And we had beautiful weather, as I said. So, yeah, look, we go down to the basin, I'll have to talk about that. I think I'm running out of time today. But we went through what they call the volcano trail and one of the highest. And it is a very volcano prevalent country. They have active volcanoes there. There's a whole chain of them. But the main one, which is absolutely stunning, is called Cotopaxi. And we went into the national park there, and it's 5,897 metres. So, you know, you're talking high. You're in the Andes. It's, you know, and we got there. And again, it was less than an hour from Quito, and we froze. It was so cold.
All these places, like four seasons in one day,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, so thank God I had the puffer jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they roll up into nothing, which is great. But, you know, they're so warm once you get those on because it was absolutely freezing.
No, there's certainly something for everybody, that's for sure.
There certainly is, and we'll talk more about that as the weeks go on.
I'll add a little bit more of that next week, but just a little bit more of Talking Travel to Go. Our travel guide, Sally Lucas, is here, and she has been trolling all over the place to find a whole stack of hot deals, Sally.
And I had to find one for Mark.
Oh, you brought this one to the top of the list. It was on the bottom. You moved it to the top.
I've moved it because I think it's quite funny. This is Hurtigruten, or they call themselves HX now, but
not where I come from.
Not where you come from. It's got to be Hurtigruten.
There's Telecom, there's Kentucky Fried Chicken, and it's Hurtigruten. We don't change names around here.
Okay. Now, they have a saying, apparently, the locals, and I'm not going to try and say it in Norwegian, but it's...
Please don't.
Ata det for god fisk, and it means take it as good fish. But then that translates to means to believe something without doubt.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Gotcha.
So that's what they're saying. That's what Norway is. It's authentic. You can experience and believe that that's what it's going to be. It's one of the most attractive scenic voyages in the world. It's renowned as that. It's well known. It's not just them saying that.
Gotcha.
It's actually renowned. So anyway, and they also say they've got another saying called and gladlax, which means a very positive and happy person, or a happy salmon, to be precise.
Happy salmon. Gee, Norway, no one likes a brag in Norway, but they're having a crack, aren't they?
So who wouldn't be a happy salmon? You can get $1,200 off right now on their selected original voyages that have connected their communities there since 1893. And you can also save up to $1,400 per cabin or receive bonus excursions on what they call their signature voyages as well. So keep those in mind. They're good rebates to be had. Valid on all bookings made from now until the 30th of September until sold out. So it's a matter of getting in as soon as you can if you're still thinking of doing a lovely Norwegian voyage.
But just keep in mind, Sally, the salmon gets eaten by the bear. Just saying. Just saying.
Going to talk about some rail journeys now. Now, the first ones are actually in Australia, and they're using some vintage railway carriages and engines to do this.
Love when that happens. That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, one's the Golden West, which is a five-day one, September to November, and that includes a riverboat cruise on the Hawkesbury, a winery in the Hunter Valley, the Liverpool Plains, goes into Bathurst and all that sort of area. They've got another one called the Riverina Rail Tour, where you visit an antique mechanical music museum in Bowral, lunch at a Coolerman artisan cheesemaker, you visit a farm and some of the best producers in the Riverina, and you stop at Mount Victoria for a ride on the old zigzag railway. There's a North Coast Rail Tour where you explore Port Macquarie on a scenic lunch cruise. Then you go and take in the sights and surrounds of Byron Bay. You go to the Slim Dusty Centre in Kempsey, calling even on good old Maitland on the way back down.
Wonderful.
And then there's one doing Bathurst for the car nuts. So you can go out there in October and you go through the Great Dividing Range to Mount Victoria and you travel through 10 tunnels, which replace the famous old Lithgow zigzag route to get to the Mount Panorama race circuit. And there you go. You're on there to watch the race. If you're a race nut, which I am, I've been a few times to Bathurst, but not for a while. And some other great rail journeys, though, these are overseas now. So discovering Japan by rail, of course, the rail system in Japan is second to none, as we all know or have heard, even if you haven't been there, it is second to none. They've got a 12-day lovely journey going through the main areas of Japan where you save up to $1,400 per couple. Now, this is for next year. They've got another one to America. It's a 17-day that goes all the way across America, which is fantastic, from one coast to t'other, San Francisco to New York, which is a great one. 17 days, as I said, with a saving of up to $1,400. Their departure's April to September next year. We've got the Edinburgh and the Scottish Highlands and Islands. So you're even going to the Kyle of Lochalsh as well. And so the Isle of Mull, etc. And even on an old Jacobite steam train for part of it. So that's another lovely one. 9 days, March to October next year, saving up to $1,000 per couple. Lastly, but not leastly, you've got a Grand Alpine Explorer from May to September. Now, this is a lovely one. You've got 14 days and you're going to like places like Zurich, Interlaken, including the Jungfrau Railway, doing the Glacier Express from Interlaken via Brig into St Moritz, and then the Bernina Express into Tirano. Some beautiful stops on this, the Neuschwanstein Castle, Salzburg, and eventually into Munich. So lovely itinerary. So some lovely rail journeys. And we've also got quite a lot of lovely itineraries in Australia at the moment for people who want to do it on their own, like motorhomes, hiring a motorhome and doing it your own way, doing your own thing, which a lot of people love to do. They mightn't have their own, but this way you can hire one and off you go.
And I suppose as well with that, like you can get the vibe of it. You might be thinking that's something you want to do, you want to buy one, invest in one, but you can have a go.
Yeah. And see whether it's your cup of tea, you know. So this is a 10-day top day, I'll get it out in a minute, a 10-day top end tour, which obviously is doing Darwin, Kakadu National Park, Catherine, Litchfield, etc. And that's August and December this year, from August to December. And that starts from just $985 per person. And that a few extra things are included there as well. Some extra, little trips are thrown in. There's another 12-day one doing Tassie from Hobart back to Hobart, which is great. Cradle Mountain, Launceston, Strawn, Coles Bay, you know, Port Arthur, the whole box and dice. That starts from just over $1,000 per person. The South Island of New Zealand, what a beautiful part of New Zealand that is, the South Island. It's stunning. And this is a 15-day motorhome hire to pick up and drop off in Christchurch. And that starts from $1,000 per person. And that's pretty cheap for 15 days. And a lot of these too, you've got the opportunity to win $150 worth of vouchers to spend as you go on all of these as well. And there's a two island of New Zealand as well, a 22-day. And that's only from just over $1,470 per person. So there's some great things out there if you're wanting to trial the motorhome thing before, maybe, as you say, suggesting whether you might want to buy one or whether you just like to hire them when you need to do it and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, because, I mean, to buy, they're not cheap.
And then you've got to garage it. And exactly. A lot of people mightn't have the height or the necessary. And then you have all these people parking them in the street. Don't you hate that? Well, the caravans, the boats, the motorhomes.
That's true as well. But again, you might say, well, look, it might be a type of holiday you love. You can do one of those every year.
Yeah. And it'd be cheaper than buying one. And the upkeep and the fuel and everything and the rego of running it. Maybe you've got to store it somewhere as well.
Sally, we've covered just about every type of holiday you have today, so we'll look forward to hearing some more of yours next week when Talking Travel returns.
Certainly will, Mark. Look forward to it.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.